The Around the NFL Podcast is a positive locker room presence.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What up, boys?
Hey, Dan. How are you?
I'm good, and we should all be very good and happy because we're going to have a special guest later in the show. Greg, you did the scouting on this, the advanced scouting. You traveled across the world to find our next Around the NFL writer.
Well, it was hard to find another writer shorter than me, but I found that man. No, actually, Connor Orr,
Is that even accurate?
Around the NFL writer is a little taller than me, okay. But, you know, it's in this. Basically, he's not adding any height to the Around the NFL basketball team.
But, I'm still the tallest guy on the team at 5'10 and three quarters.
Yeah, not a good-looking squad. Well, no. Very good-looking, but not good at basketball. But, yeah, Connor comes to us from the Newark Star-Ledger, where he covered the Jets for a couple years, and he covered the Giants the last couple years. He's going to be dropping into this show.
He will.
To talk a little NFC East.
And I imagine he came in here and he saw the studio for the first time. He's got to be real nervous behind that glass, thinking with each passing minute he's getting closer to putting his headset on. So, no pressure, though, buddy.
Yeah, it's like joining, you know, the 86 Celtics or something like that. You just don't want to mess up with that team chemistry.
We have officially jumped the shark. We are very high on ourselves. Okay, so we got a great show today. Welcome aboard, Connor, and we'll talk to you later. We are going to get it. We talked about last week, Wes, the biggest surprises of the season. I said at that time, what I was looking forward to was to the negative slant, the biggest disappointments, and that's what we're going to talk about today. The NFL's biggest disappointments through the first quarter-ish of the season. We're also going to do a little New York Giants chat, which is timely with Connor here. He's a former Giants beat man. We're going to talk about the Giants and also the NFC East, a division that, let's face it, is a little friskier than we thought it would be entering the season. We're going to, do our Thursday night preview, as we do every Wednesday, taking a look at the Colts and the Texans, a nice AFC South showdown. That's a little surprising, too. But before any of that, we're going to talk to another man behind the glass. The man behind the glass, Mr. Tay Dite.
What's going on, guys? How you guys doing?
How are you doing?
Doing good, doing good. You know, we got the team of ATL figured out last episode, Chargers.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. And if anyone didn't listen, I mean, because that was
a shame on you if you didn't listen.
Kind of snuck it in there. We didn't even know that was going to happen. The Chargers.
The San Diego Chargers are the 2014 team of Around the NFL. And, you know, a special shout-out to Chris Wessling for being so magnanimous and just joining us. And being part of this.
Yeah, don't call him a man who is unable to compromise. You're like an old government man that just crossed the aisle to get a deal done.
Mm. Yeah, they're not my favorite team to watch, but I'm not going to hold this up to where it's week 10 and we're still waiting on our team.
Well, bipartisanship is what they call that.
I think Greg made a good point a couple weeks ago. We can have a team of ATL, and I can still have a team that I like to watch outside of that.
Well, you can. Yeah.
No, you can't.
Because I gave up being a
what if
Jets
I just
fan.
Don't,
you, not fi- you haven't heard what this is about?
What if I start enjoying a team on my little iPad, on my little tablet, and I never even tell you about it?
So you would like Ashley Madison, the team of ATL?
Is that exactly.
I don't know if they have Ashley Madison. We have a lot of overseas listeners. Ashley Madison's a website where you can actually log on and pay with a credit card to find someone to cheat on your wife or girlfriend with. I don't do that.
I didn't even know the reference.
It
seems like an awful idea.
I can't imagine. It seems like
what the hell's going on out here?
It seems like quite a paper trail or internet trail you're going to leave behind by doing that.
I think people overseas have a little more class. They're probably not doing anything close to this.
What if this Ashley's busy on a certain night? You know what I'm saying?
I think there are many.
What the hell's going on out here?
TD, can we please do some news?
'86 Celtics. Now I'm thinking more like '96 Chicago Bulls starting five.
Because if this was a Celtics, he would have been Jerry Sheesting. And you don't want that.
Well, no. Actually, no. If this is the Bulls, because Kevin Patra is our fifth. So well, this would make
that was disrespectful.
He's a Tony Kukoc. He's a sixth man.
Let's go back to the Celtics and go. He is Bill Walton.
Yeah,
you can do that.
Let's just bounce around different eras.
A little bit of a resemblance there too.
Wow, a lot of
it's only
minor
foot and a half different.
I'm still a little bit disturbed by the discovery of Dan's web surfing. Clean it up.
My wife, she's not going to believe me when I tell her that I only knew about that from ads. All right, so let's get into the news, and we'll start with the Arizona Cardinals, who, you know, have what appears on paper to be a highly winnable game coming up against the Washington Redskins in their own building. However, they have quarterback issues, as we know. Carson Palmer has the nerve issue that seems to be going in the right direction. He threw in practice on Wednesday, but he remains a question mark. Drew Stanton also did some light throwing on Wednesday, but he's coming off a concussion. Everyone's boy, Logan, he's the other guy in the mix here. So you don't know who's going to start for them, but what we do know is that Palmer and Stanton seem to be on the right path on Wednesday, at least.
Is that the right path if Logan Thomas took all the first-team reps?
No, it's terrible.
Well, it's a right path in the sense that at least it wasn't just Logan Thomas by himself. There's some indecision here, but
this is one of those games in a loaded division, a loaded conference. You got to win at home against Washington, and I don't really like what's going on in Arizona. It's not just the quarterbacks that are hurt. Matt Shaughnessy's out for this game, who's played a lot of snaps for them. Calais Campbell's out for this game. Patrick Peterson's not 100%. They've lost so many people. At some point, you think it's going to catch up.
This is Bruce Arians we're talking about. He got Kelly Holcomb to throw for 450-plus yards against the Steelers in the playoffs.
Well, he couldn't get more than two completions for Logan Thomas last week.
Well, he's got a week to practice him up. I mean, it's concerning. It was just a couple seasons ago that Arizona couldn't keep a quarterback healthy.
Yeah, and we'll get into our picks in Thursday's show, but I will say I do like Logan Thomas or not. I do like Bruce Arians versus Jay Gruden at University of Phoenix Stadium.
Point made.
Moving forward, Calvin Johnson, the Detroit Lions wide receiver, really hasn't been the same. It seems like forever ago that opening Monday night against the Giants, he looked like his old self, the old 2,000-yard self. But he's got this ankle injury. And on Wednesday, we learn, I guess for the first time, there's a diagnosis, at least that's Calvin Johnson's diagnosis, or what he's been told, a high ankle sprain, which obviously we all know is not a good thing to have. He said that he's hopeful he'll play. Earlier in the week, Lions coach Jim Caldwell said that he would definitely strongly consider sitting Johnson to rest the ankle this week against the Vikings. Johnson was asked on Wednesday what it would take for him to play. His reply via the Lions official site, a lot of treatment. So Calvin Johnson still doesn't sound like himself. Everybody knows high ankle sprain's bad news.
The last couple of weeks, he might as well not even be out there, so I can see why they would want him to take a week off.
Well, and he hasn't been happy with their plan the last couple of weeks. Our NFL media insider Ian Rappaport said that he was frustrated with his usage. He essentially was a decoy the last couple of weeks. He was frustrated that he had to play at less than 100%. And they wasted a couple of weeks. I mean, because now...
Well, what does he want, though? To not play?
He basically, he wants to play, but it sounded like he wanted to be told not to play because he really wasn't ready to.
Perhaps.
That makes sense. Him as a decoy isn't working. When the first catch he caught last week, you could tell like he was limping immediately after catching the ball.
Well, they went after his ankle, too.
Well, yeah, but he couldn't move.
Well, it seems like it would have worked initially because if he's out there, you're freaking out if you're the Jets. But now teams might be willing to find out, listen, let's see what you can do. And it's a shame because the Lions, after all these years, finally, in Golden Tate, have an ideal complement to Calvin Johnson, and Megatron's not healthy.
I don't know if you need another. Maybe you don't need Calvin Johnson. Golden Tate's one of the best receivers in the league.
I'm not
this
sure
year.
I'd go down that road.
Every game he makes a play. I mean, makes a couple plays. He has been really impressive. We had a lot of scientists teed over the offseason about Golden Tate, and I was totally wrong. Wes was right on that.
Greg Rosenthal, don't need Megatron in Detroit.
And Golden, he's one of those guys, he's a very good player, and he's really showing it more than ever this year. Annoys me a little bit with some of his antics and the way he carries on. But good job by him calling out Jimmy Schwartz for the carry off the field move on Sunday.
I believe he said total douche move.
Yes. And I agree. Other Lions news, Matt Prater, the former Broncos kicker, who was a Pro Bowler, actually, in 2013, signed a one-year deal with the Lions. Of course, it's been a disaster in Detroit. Their kicking game, Alex Henry, went 1-for-5 in two games since joining the team in August. What is the stat? Wes, it's 1 out of 9 beyond 30 yards?
Yes.
That's outrageous.
It's crazy. That didn't even happen in the 1950s when you had like a 30% chance of kicking a field goal.
And by the way, they play in a dome.
They would have beat the Bills if they had a good kicker. What was their – I'm forgetting if they could have won their other game.
It was a Panthers game, and they missed a few kicks there too.
Yeah, not a close game, though. But it's a disaster.
As far as – this is the worst situation possible leading into this week with their kicking game actually just killing them. But being able to land Matt Prater is pretty good. To get that at this point in the season, they upgraded in a big way, potentially.
Like, imagine if this were, and this would never happen, the quarterback position where, you know, we've got terrible quarterback play, the guy can't complete a pass, a total disaster, offense is stalled. Oh, but there's a Pro Bowl quarterback that, you know, had drank a few too many beers at some stage, got released by his team, he's on his couch, bang, we've got a Pro Bowler sitting on our team.
Josh Freeman's made the Pro Bowl, hasn't he?
Prater's pretty good, though. I mean, he's the guy that, you know, during the SNL Tebow skit, when Jesus comes to the Broncos locker room, he prays to Matt Prater because that was the key to that Broncos team.
Prater is also the guy.
More at, headlines from Greg.
I pray to you, Matt Prater.
At Super Bowl Media Week, Matt Prater was also the guy with a really bad earring in his ear pretending to talk on a cell phone when we were trying to talk to him during the group availability. And I knew at that moment that Matt Prater would end up being released and signed by the Lions in October.
I remember you.
No, I didn't.
Well, no, but
he was kind of.
You were.
You mentioned he was not a pleasant fellow.
No, and I wrote about it, and I heard from him. That's also a lie. I'm irrelevant, mostly, in the media.
I never heard back from Al Leiter either, and I wanted to.
Oh, yeah. Al Leiter ran you over at me.
Yeah, he was a punk.
What's up with you and kickers and punches, Dan? They don't seem to like you. You don't seem to like them. What's going on there?
There's mutual disrespect towards each other, I guess. I don't know.
His analysis is too cutting of their craft.
Who's the other guy I got after? I don't.
You know, you're doing what he did to you,
Pat McAfee. McAfee. Yeah. Well, listen,
he doesn't know who you are, neither, Dan.
Jay Feely get annoyed at you for something?
I'm biting my tongue on all of this.
Jay Feely annoyed at the world.
He just wants a job. Finally, in the news, Jaguars coach Gus Bradley confirmed at a Monday news conference that the backfield for the Jaguars is now an open competition. Toby Gerhardt is not taking the job and running back. I did that. After an offseason of hype, nailed it. And now entering the picture, Chris Wessling, Storm Johnson. Ow! Yes. Doesn't it make more sense that that Storm Johnson would be in your backfield than a Toby Gerhardt?
Greg said he sounds like a soap opera star. Storm Johnson.
Yeah, he does.
He former college teammate of Blake Bortles, and he was the best of all the running backs last week. Toby Gerhardt, whatever's going on there, isn't working. Denard Robinson's looked pretty good. Jordan Todman's just a guy. So they want to narrow it down to two running backs instead of four. And from Gus Bradley's comments, it sounds like they want to give Storm Johnson a chance to take it over.
They seem to have Gerhardt and a bunch of change of pace guys. And the problem a little bit, I see no fix to their offensive line. Part of the issue with Gerhardt, and listen, he was a making the leap candidate. That looks like an absolute swing and miss.
Let's be honest. You're not taking this well. I mean, Story came up, and a pall cast over the room.
Again, because the way that my summer vacation, which is, if you're a football writer at NFL.com, 1 week, I spent the first day of it trying to crank out three of these Greg also took 1 week, I believe. You got to crank out three of these making the lead pieces. I spent about 2 hours watching Toby Gerhardt tape, getting all fired up, writing a long piece. I feel wronged.
Well,
I could have picked someone
else. Because it wasn't
else.
Just the making the leap. We seemed to talk about Toby Gerhardt a lot in the summer on this podcast and then leading into the season. So he did you dirty.
No, it pretty much was just that.
If it makes you feel any better, Storm Johnson's not going to run well behind this line either.
That doesn't give my vacation back to me.
All right, so as we hinted at the top of the show today, we are going to talk a little bit about the biggest disappointments in the season so far. We talked last week about the biggest surprises, now the biggest disappointments. Chris Wessling, who really does a great job with all these lists. Let's talk about that for a second. You're so good at this, Wes, and that's probably why Greg hired you.
I don't know. It's one of those things where I don't even know how invested I am in these 10. If you guys say you missed one or two, I would probably just agree with you and say, yeah, I didn't think of that.
Good selling point.
Yeah, that was kind of a Sessler sell when you try to pay Mark a compliment.
I think you're somewhat invested that you went out of your way to needle Sessler's Browns, choosing the Cleveland Browns first-round draft picks as
your
number
two. Yeah, let's get into this.
I did not needle them. I actually spoke with Mark about this very issue before I wrote about it.
Let's talk about that. We're going to get into that because I have something to say about that as well. So here is Chris Wessling, the mailman, his top 10 disappointments. The New Orleans Saints, number one.
The entire operation.
The entire operation, top to bottom. The Browns' first-round picks are number two. EJ Manuel, three. The Detroit Lions kickers, we talked about that earlier on today's show, is 4. Geno Smith, 5. Ew. Oakland Raiders is paycheck veteran, 6. Number 7, Nick Foles and LeSean McCoy of the Eagles. Number 8, the Patriots offense. 9, Josh McCown, another making the leap casualty. And number 10, Morris Claiborne, cornerback, Dallas Cowboys. Who wants to start? Greg.
Well, let's get into the Browns.
Okay. Here's the thing I want to just say about this, Wes. When we did the top 10 surprises, the Browns were basically nowhere to be found, even though there was a lot of positive buzz about
them. They were a 1-2 operation.
Yeah, but there was some buzz under the surface. We all saw there could be something decent there. Brian Hoyer made honorable mention. Now they have a big win. The franchise is on fire, and they land number 2 on your most disappointing list.
The franchise is on fire for reaching 500 at the one-month mark?
Well, you have to understand the background with this franchise.
I don't know. I guess I defy you to tell me how their first-round picks have not been disappointments.
Well, okay. Brian Hoyer has played too good to lose the job after the
– Well, hold on. In August, he left a lot to be desired. He left the door open for Johnny Manziel. Manziel could have taken that job, and he didn't.
Now that I think about it, Wes is right. They have been abject disappointments. To this point, it's just funny to see it number 2 on the list when you're thinking.
Well, if
of
you
the
throw in
like
NFL.
A shot, throw in Barkevious Mingo.
Oh wow, last year's pick.
I'm talking about Joe Hayden, Phil Taylor.
It's fair because we did talk
about Trent
it.
Richardson. That guy's a bum.
Brandon Whedon.
Oh wait, no. Wait.
Well, but this is this year.
The Trent Richardson.
No,
trade
I'm going by.
Out.
If you actually read the piece that I wrote.
I did read it. I did read it. That's why I don't understand it.
Well, Justin Gilbert.
Why is the 2010 first round pick? Have anything to do, so it
says picks plural.
All right.
Would you like me to add all in front of the sentence?
Please clarify it.
It is fair to say when Manziel got drafted and Gilbert got drafted, the excitement level for that draft, and especially for Manziel in this room and what he would do to make the Browns more watchable, was sky high. Yeah, so the fact that their afterthoughts and Gilbert, was he even active last week? I mean,
he was essentially benched. So and Chris and I did talk about this. I don't disagree with the assessment that when you have 2 number 1 picks and they've essentially not lived up to the billing 4 weeks in, 4 games in. I will say this, Cleveland at least with Manziel not actually taking the job away the way Blake Bortles did, Pettine and company have handled the whole situation pretty well. Would you give them that?
Absolutely. I think they've handled it about as well as you can.
And isn't it a little early to get on a cornerback, too? Isn't that a position where it's typical for a rookie to take some time to learn how to play the position at this level?
Says the guy who watched D. Milner do the exact same thing Justin Gilbert did last
in the same system.
And, again, I'm throwing in guys like Barkevious Mingo, who was billed in some circles as the best pass rusher in last year's draft and is now a coverage specialist for the Browns.
All right, let's move to a different spot.
Let's talk a little 2012 13 first-round picks, I think. E.J. Manuel and Geno Smith. That's one of the big takeaways from this last month, that the rest of the team around E.J. Manuel was ready to win, and he was worse than we could have imagined. And then Geno Smith, who we all were really optimistic about, and some good things are happening for that offense in terms of the running game, falls apart.
What do you think about, Wes, I'll ask you, what do you think about E.J. Manuel? Because do you think that organizationally they're even that disappointed? Do you think they saw this coming and like Kyle Orton was the what we got from the outside to get a hint of that. But how disappointed do you think they are, or did they see this coming?
I think $5.5 million says it all.
Yeah.
They were disappointed enough that they had to go out and pull Kyle Orton out of retirement. The guy was going to sit on his couch all year, and they paid him $5.5 million, a guy who hasn't started really in a few years, to come in and be their insurance policy. And I think they knew – we talked about this in August. Our guess was either before Halloween or before Columbus Day, Kyle Orton would be starting for E.J. Manuel.
The disappointment is not just his play, but the fact that he was overdrafted. You didn't need to take him where you took E.J. Manuel in last year's draft, and that goes on the front office right there because you invested a pick. It could have been someone else.
Yeah,
E.J. Manuel.
And there is talk from both him and the franchise that, you know, maybe he could come back and be the starting quarterback again next year. How often have we ever seen that with a first-round pick?
Well, and what's going to change?
Yeah.
Jaguars held on to Blaine Gabbert 2 or 3 iterations of him, and it never worked out.
Right. The Bills did the same thing with J.P. Lossman.
Yeah.
They kept going back to him. It never seems to work out that way. The number one spot on your list, though, intrigues me, the New Orleans Saints. I mean, imagine if they hadn't made that comeback at home against Tampa, what this bye week would be like in New Orleans. Place would be on fire. But, I mean, they have never looked like a very good team this year.
No, I use the word malaise, and I keep coming back to that. That's what their whole season seems like. It just seems like they're going through the motions most of the time, and I don't know what's gotten into them.
You say malaise. It's actually malaise.
Is that right?
That's incorrect.
Yes.
Wait, Wesley, if you had to take one of your fellow around the NFL scribes and place them on a disappointment list, and you
like
can't dodge
this,
pick one of your writers and put them on here. Who's
whenever
disappointed
I send
you?
Out a mailbag prompt, like, oh, ask questions to the mailbag, everything's like, who would you kill if you had the chance? ATL.
Who's disappointed you the most? Who's come in, you know, who's not really delivered over 5-6 weeks of the season?
You know, let me turn this around and say, actually, over the past 6 months, we've done a good job of cleaning things up. Mm. And now we're at the best place we've ever been. I think our editor's desk is great. Our Around the League crew is awesome.
I think you're hiding something.
But it wasn't always like that.
Mm. Mark, would you...
Things are looking up.
Would you mind us getting back to the list, Mark?
Oh, sure. Yeah, back to
great
the...
Great aside.
Yeah.
How about the Eagles? I think they
nice
should be a little higher up, by the way, Wes.
Yeah.
Nick Foles and LeSean McCoy. McCoy was basically MVP level. Nick Foles had one of the great years statistically in a long time at quarterback in terms of turnovers to touchdowns. I would have thought you would have put them in the top three, but they're here at 7.
They're 4-1.
Yeah,
right, but this is about
Nick
the
Foles
right,
or
but
McCoy.
I can't kill a 4-1 team.
You could kill Nick Foles.
I have.
You know who I'm disappointed with? ESPN's QBR rating somehow is Nick Foles number 14. He's the guy that has the biggest gap between his box score and his actual play of any player I've ever seen. Because, I mean, you made the point on Twitter. He's been outplayed by every quarterback he's played this year.
I guess Kirk Cousins would be debatable, but you could say that he's – yeah, I think you can take that position.
And don't we always say that you can't kill a quarterback for his team losing? Isn't it the same thing with winning,
yes,
too, though? Like, what? Just because the Eagles are winning because their defense and special teams is giving them 17 touchdowns a week. I mean, Foles has been dreadful a lot, and McCoy can't even average 3 yards a carry. To me, McCoy – I know the offensive line is in tatters, but that's the biggest surprise to me, that he's been one of the worst running backs in the league.
Speaking of the line, how about the disappointment is all the, you know, months of puff pieces talking about Chip Kelly's sports science.
Oh,
this is the one
yeah.
coach that's cracked the code on how no one will get injured on the entire team. The reason these two guys are on the list, let's go at least McCoy, is the fact that offensive line cannot stay healthy. Total shambles. That's on you, Chip Kelly.
I like that.
Yeah, I can't
blame. I think that's on luck of the draw.
Well,
yeah. Injury.
All right, then it's no more just luck of the draw than the fact that he kept them healthy all last season.
Right, I agree with that. That was a weird storyline that we saw in the summer, that Chip Kelly is a magical formula for keeping football players healthy when they hit each other all game.
Until the games begin.
Maybe he needs more RC cars driving around on the field. Finally, before we end this discussion, does anyone else have anybody that's not on Wes's list that maybe should be?
Open-ended question. Everyone's just sort of sitting and searching.
Wait, does anybody?
Guess we should have prepared one.
I sort of wondered if RG3 should be in the top 10.
I was going to say RG3.
I like that.
I see, Wes, I have it highlighted right here.
Yeah.
Because I was with you, Wes. I thought that this guy was going to be a comeback player of the year this year, and you could maybe keep him off the list because, oh, he's hurt. But that was part of the thing with him. It's like, was he going to be able to stay on the field? But even before he was hurt, he just didn't seem like the same guy, whether it was preseason or week one. I think hurt in week 2? He was. So,
well, this is how the sausage was made. I got tired of writing about him already this year, so he's not on there.
That makes sense. I'd throw
a peek behind the carton.
Even though they're 3-2, I'd throw the Steelers on there. I don't know. There's something like they should be good. I want to be excited about them. I want to like watching them. I know they found a way to win, and yet they've had some stink bomb performances. And even when they get a win in Jacksonville,
they're about to be 3-3.
There's just something like the defense isn't any better. We thought it would be a lot better. We thought it would be exciting and young. I want more. That's on my list.
That was one of the hardest games to watch. When I watched almost all the games on Game Rewind yesterday because I had an off day, and that was the hardest game to get through. Mm. Even harder than the Jets' egg that they laid.
I'm disappointed with the home crowd of the St. Louis Rams. consistently disappointing. Called out by Tony Romo, I believe, as just being a snooze fest of an environment.
Well, indirectly, but yeah, he said.
Okay, well, how about?
Well, no, how about this? The Cowboys' home stadium crowd. Yeah, there's a disappointment.
There you go.
Tony Romo said on Sunday that it was like playing a road game in his own stadium because he estimated loosely that there was about 40,000 Texans fans in his own building. He had to go to a silent snap count. Bad job, Jarrow World.
I should have put Cowboys fans on my list for biggest disappointment.
Sure, why not? A little trolling.
By the way, speaking of Cowboys, do you think it's a little bittersweet for Cowboys fans, the 4-1 Cowboys, the fans already realize they're halfway to their win total this year?
Oh.
Well, I thought you liked the Cowboys.
He's a big Cowboys fan.
It's going to be a long
Yankees.
December.
Let's throw
Counting Crows.
Let's throw Reggie Bush, by the way, on this disappointments list.
Well, he could just stay there like number eight every year.
Because, you know, I'm getting every time I watch them, I get flashbacks to the 2008 Saints where, like, Reggie Bush has – it looks like he's going to have a 3-yard gain, and then he runs backwards for 15 yards and gets everyone all crazy and then loses 4 yards. Now he's hurt. He's always hurt.
There's been a game or two so far where I've been really impressed
right.
by
says
him.
No. Last couple weeks.
Wes says you're wrong, Greg.
He got injured. I don't know.
It's
I
typical.
Guess we could – yeah.
What
we
about
we
our
could
guy
– did he ever give back his Heisman? I'm disappointed.
I don't care about that issue.
Whatever happened to the Kenny Britt breakout, by the way?
Oh, what about the Kenny Britt
he had a
teammate
decent game.
Breakout?
Against the Eagles, he had a nice touchdown catch and another play down the field. And
that's his breakout?
Hey, that's what do you want
right.
from Kenny Britt?
We're devolving.
69 yeah. and 68 receiving yards last two games. A touchdown last game.
Don't get in the way of our narrative.
Yeah. I don't want these facts, TD.
Narratives.
All right, Kenny Britt, number one on Wes's reformatted top 10 disappointments list. All right, that's it. Good talk, guys. All right, gentlemen, so it is time now. And just a little peek behind the glass, we don't have enough headsets, so I came back behind the glass.
Team player.
So I'm standing now looking upon the group, a new group, almost the future without me I'm looking at.
I kind of like this.
Yeah, this is weird. But Connor Orr is now seated in my old spot next to Greg Rosenthal. Connor Orr, welcome to the Around the NFL group.
My Woo! Goodness, thank you, everybody. This is great.
You guys... have no idea how weird it is watching TD from this angle, by the way, as he celebrates.
Connor, now that you're in that chair, you're going to host on Sunday, so prepare. Well, Dan doesn't do any prep, so.
Exactly.
It's just winging it, you know?
We were just talking about.
I can hear you, by the way, Greg.
We were just talking, Kenny Britt. You have a history covering Kenny Britt in New Jersey.
Kenny Britt and Will Hill are two of my favorite players of all time because I've covered probably between them about 20 separate minor arrests, and you haven't covered football until you've driven to a car wash to interview the employees who saw
in Hoboken, right?
In Hoboken,
I was yeah.
saw what?
Who saw a somebody discarding something frantically from his pocket?
Something illegal.
Vice police rolled up to the. That, to the scene.
I feel like we should say because it might sound like he was discarding an Uzi or something.
Right.
It was like a marijuana cigarette.
Yeah, no,
I
it wasn't a firearm.
Not a dead body.
I was going to say you won't have Will Hill to kick around anymore, but now that you are working for NFL.com, Will Hill will be on your agenda.
I go where Will Hill goes. You know,
he should be off the suspension list any week now.
That's right.
All right, so it makes sense since we have the former Giants beat man. Connor Orr with us. I forgot Connor's name, but in time I will remember. I just learned today that it's Connor with one N. So we have a Greg with two G's and a Mark with a C. Come on, guys.
What's unusual about the latter?
I don't know. Just come on.
Come on, Dan.
Since we have a former Giants beat writer, let's talk the NFC East. And I'll start by throwing it to Wes, by the way, because Wes, who has long been – I would say it's fair to say Wes anti-Giants.
A Giants loather.
Yeah, a Giants loather.
Well,
very
can't
interesting.
Stand them boring. The most boring team in the NFL since I've been following football.
So tell us, wow. Chris Wessling, what you tweeted after some film watching, I believe yesterday.
I tweeted that after watching all of the games on Game Rewind, the Giants were the most fun team to watch in Week 5.
Mm. Wow. So why don't we start there? We'll talk about all the NFCs, which is becoming a sneaky, fun division. What do we think about the Giants so far? Wes is excited watching them. Does everybody else feel the same way?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, you know, watching them in the preseason, it was absolutely miserable. And now the fact that they can actually go to like a bunch or a four wide with Odell Beckham, Victor Cruz, and Reuben Randle. I mean, you saw the first two times they went four wide in that game. There were guys open by 20 yards. And I mean,
Beckham was open twice deep once he drew a penalty. And easy leaping ability on that touchdown. He just looks like a world-class athlete to me.
And that touchdown, they had not practiced that route at all before that. So, I mean, you can just imagine, you know,
Question for you. I mean, when you were there in through the summer and it was in the preseason, it just looked like an epic disaster to the point where this is going to get real ugly. Did the players, you know, they say what they say. Did you get a sense that they really felt this could turn around as soon as it has?
No, you know, just being honest, because, you know, you have to toe that company line. You always have to say that things are going to get better. But I think in the back of my mind, I could kind of feel some of the veterans, especially after the preseason, being like, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. I mean, is this really going to happen again? But, I mean, credit to them. I mean, you know, you have a new offensive coordinator that's just 3 years older than your starting quarterback telling everybody that he's going to make it work. And they're making it work. I mean, they won three in a row, and they look like one of the best teams in the division.
And really, they should have won the Cardinals game, too. That was a real low point, obviously, in the season where they were at home and made every mistake you can make. If they just took care of business there, they'd be flying high and everybody would be talking about the Giants.
Wes beat me to the punch on Twitter by saying he thinks the Giants are going to win the division and are the favorites. And I agree. I think they are the favorites in the division now. It's not like we're changing our picks or anything. I just think if you look at them top to bottom, I don't see a huge weakness, whereas – every other team, you can see where they're going to fall off. They're one of the more complete teams, even if they're not quite as, like, wildly explosive. Like, the offensive line's so much better. The defense is pretty good up front, pretty good in the back. Get excited, Giants fans. I always hate watching the Giants, too. I feel differently this year.
Why? I just feel like they're thin at spots, though. I mean, you look at that defensive line, and if one of those guys went down, it would go into a territory where they're just dangerously thin. And then I don't know, I want to see them play the Colts, I want to see them play the Seahawks, the 49ers, the Cowboys, the Eagles. I mean, they've got a heck of a stretch here coming up, and then maybe I'll change my mind.
Sessler, what are you so worked up about?
I don't understand the, like, across the board hatred for the I guess, like, I grew up in the
I'm
tri-state
saying over
area,
the last
so.
5 or 6 years,
well, look at
they're
their
always on TV. Yeah.
Well,
they're
they won
always
the Super Bowl in
they're
the last
always
5 years.
Boring.
Wait, the Patriots fan doesn't like the Giants?
Oh, give me
that is interesting.
Weird.
They've been a pretty mediocre franchise in the regular season under Tom Coughlin.
They've had the most overrated player of the past decade, Eli Manning.
Ooh.
Wow.
I don't know.
Come on. That's hardly even an opinion. That's a
I don't
fact.
Know. I the only reason I disagree is because I don't know how highly he's rated.
At this point, I'm not sure people
first ballot Hall of Famer, according
Dan
to everybody.
Dan hates this because he bleeds giant blue.
Well,
the only Jets fan that
if
loves
you listen to the podcast, you know that's not true. But I put stock into little things like dominant playoff runs 2 times out of 5 years and 2 Super Bowl rings. But that's just me.
I don't put that much into them because
of course not.
Because you could easily have not made the playoffs those years, and that's all just down to luck. That's
not
nothing
how football
to do
works.
It. Do with how they did.
Well, I think if he plays above average football for 2 more seasons, 3 more seasons in that offense, I think you have to consider him a first ballot Hall of Famer.
And Wes will be there.
No, Wes.
I will
Wes
never
will
put
write
football
the
Hall of Famer.
Let's
he
move
has
on.
Been a fraction of the player of Big Ben right. and Phillip Rivers.
Connor, you have to leave now.
Yeah, let's move on. And before we move on, I just want to say, like, standing watching over you guys, I feel powerful.
Yeah. You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
Let's talk about the Eagles.
You look more like a scarecrow.
Let's talk about the Eagles. So they were the team that we all talked about as the favorite entering the season. Do we think they're going to kind of put it together on offense or what?
Not until their offensive line gets healthy.
But they will, right? Kelce will get back. Lane Johnson's back from suspension.
I think they still miss DeSean Jackson, too.
That's fair. I think there's a lot of panic around a team that is 4-1 with what's going on with their offensive line. I'm not going to panic over Philadelphia, and I'm not sure that the Giants are the odds-on favorite to win the division.
I seem to remember, like, last year in training camp, watching other teams try to prepare for the Eagles and not knowing what it was going to be. I mean, it was so haphazard. I mean, they were just throwing anything against the wall because that's what they were expecting. And now that you have some sort of a template, I think that the league is catching up a little bit, which I think really manifests itself in what Nick Foles has been doing this year.
Well, he leads the league in giveaways, you know, interceptions and fumbles. And I don't think Foles is going to vastly improve. I do think the offense will get it together because even in those first 3 games when Foles wasn't playing well in those games, they still find a way to get yards. I mean, Kelly is such a huge advantage. But the defense is blah, and the quarterback's not great. I don't know. I don't know if this division gets 2 playoff teams. What do you think?
I picked the Giants to beat the Eagles this week because I think the Giants are better and not just by a little bit.
I took the Giants this week, too.
I feel like every week we are going through this charade where everyone's picking against the Eagles, and the Eagles keep winning.
Who's been picking against the Eagles?
Well, there was – I remember the
– I have several times, and I don't think the special teams touchdowns are something you can rely on from week to week. So I feel pretty good about
it. You have to give the Eagles this. They have found different ways to score every week, and that it's not just how is your offense doing. It's as a team, they've found ways to win games.
That stuff tends to even out over the course of a season, though. If you're relying on punt blocks for wins, you're going to be in trouble.
They got some trash talk going on this week.
That's right.
What's going on?
I think it's like Runyon and Strahan set the bar, and then it was OC and McCoy, and now it's like just minor things like, why did you say something mean about me on Twitter? Now we're down to like the
lowest. Let me guess, Antrell Roll is involved somehow.
Well, actually, Jeremy Macklin echoed.
Is Kerry Williams also involved? The two mouths that roared.
Well, Jeremy Macklin echoed your point, basically saying Roll talks too much.
So yes, he does.
He agrees with you.
Seems factual.
Roll did say that the Eagles' rise was attributed to a weak division last year, which I guess
seems fair.
That is fair. I mean,
Jeremy Macklin didn't think so, though.
All right, so what we should probably get into the team that actually leads the division.
Who?
That is the Dallas Cowboys, America's erstwhile team. And can I just say something? They're going to Seattle this week. I have a feeling they are going to put up a fight, keep it within a possession. I'm not going to say they're going to steal the game. If you're going to go out on a limb,
let's go out on a limb.
Exactly.
Are they going to win or are they going to lose?
Hey, it's going to be competitive.
They are going to lose 34-31, and they will earn people's respect despite falling in
I
the
predict
standings.
A blowout.
What, are they going to be like the Redskins and celebrate in the locker room because they lost a close game?
Yeah, and
give me a break.
Yeah, but that was ridiculous. But if that's true, there were reports that after the Redskins lost by only double digits to in their own building to a Seahawks team playing at a C-plus level, that they were singing and like carrying
well,
on in the
know
shower
about
together.
Singing, but
I like to imagine they were singing.
Singing would be incredible. That would be
in unison. They were doing like the group dance from.
I like that Dan turned it into like a 3-year-old's birthday party in the locker room.
I like to think they were doing the group dance from She's All That.
I don't think we saw the. I mean, let's. I don't. We didn't see the whole division coming, but Dallas, you know, in a sneaky way, has developed maybe the NFC's best offensive line. And that's something that when I look at Dallas, and is it all smoke and mirrors? Are they going to crumble and they're going to go 1-7? Well, they're not, because that's something that week to week they can lean on. And it's more for me, can DeMarco Murray stay healthy? It's sort of in a random question, but history tells us that's been an issue.
It's been an issue, and, I mean, if you're looking at a running back that could potentially net a huge contract at the end of the year, what's your mindset as far as, I mean, how many more times are you going to lower your shoulder when you know that on the open market you could probably net an extra 2 years and $6 million if you just come out of it clean, you know? It's a precarious situation, you know, especially with somebody that good.
How about the Redskins? Finally, we just talked about their song and dance in the locker room. I'm sure it happened. I'll stand by it. Do we have any reason to think that they're playing a little – they've been a little frisky at times this year, but do we have any reason to think they'll hang around in this division?
I don't get the sentiment that I heard coming out of Monday night that Kirk Cousins played well.
No, he had two unbelievable throws. Two great throws
to Deshaun Jackson, and they had no offense outside of that.
I think the sentiment was that he wasn't a complete dumpster fire like he was against
his previous game's best secondary.
I think that says it all about the Redskins.
Yeah.
And that's why
that's
they were
what
celebrating.
Your expectations are.
I think that's what
you
they said.
You liked him a couple weeks ago. You had him in the playoffs before the season. Or not in the playoffs, but pretty good. We liked him a couple weeks ago. I'm not giving up on them as a competitive. I don't think they're as bad as 1-4.
I'd say they're more interesting than they were a year ago to watch.
If he continues to progress, I mean, you know, just looking back at the game, he was not staring down receivers as blatantly as he used to. You could see some half-hearted attempts at least looking off safeties for the first time since he's been an actual regular starter. So, I mean, if he can continue to do stuff like that, I mean, he could probably sneak a few games by some people.
Yeah, in this league, they want you to be completely fully cooked week one of your rookie season, and Kirk Cousins is not that guy.
I believe he's now 1-6 as a starter in his career.
Not to go back to the Cowboys, but you got to lock up that Mark Sessler Assistant Coach of the Year award for Rod Marinelli at this point. If this continues with that Cowboys defense,
what about Terrell Austin?
I don't care. We all said it was going to be one of the worst defenses in history.
What about Kyle Shanahan?
And the thing about them is they seem well coached.
Good point.
They just seem like they're flying all around.
Greg, you're breaking the order of the segments even more egregious from this angle. All right. So that's it. That's the NFC East talk. Connor, it's grades time. From here, I'm going to give you the highest possible grade I can. C plus. Great job.
Thanks for having me.
No, it was easily a B.
Finally, real quick, because we're a little short on time, we're going to talk about the Thursday night game, the Indianapolis Colts and Houston Texans, 2-4-3 teams. The best teams, obviously, in that division, the Titans and Jaguars are combined 1-9. So this is really what this division is all about, and this is a big game. Gentlemen, how do we see this? I'll start with you, Chris Wessling.
I picked the Colts for one very obvious reason to me. If it's going to be close, my money's on Andrew Luck and Ryan Fitzpatrick. To me, the Texans' offense just disappears and goes in the tank way too often.
The Texans' offense, the passing game at least, is one of the worst in the league. I mean, they had 30-something yards at halftime, I believe, last week against Dallas throwing the ball, and they've disappeared. And the fact that the Colts now actually look like they have a halfway decent defense, anytime you know that you can stop the other team from passing, I don't trust them.
I went with the Colts, but I struggled a little bit because – I don't love their offensive line and haven't for a long time. And what we've seen J.J. Watt do this season, all of us. You know, I don't know. Come on.
Wow.
No,
TD.
But you know who needs to be on that disappointment list? It's Jadeveon Clowney, because that's the guy.
When he was
flapping his mouth during at New York City before the draft, what did he say he'd do to Andrew Luck?
He's got his knee. Next time around.
You're so mean to people, Mark.
You are a factory of sadness!
Wow. You know what? How about this? Live up to your big boast. This is Andrew Luck. He's going to win this game.
Clowney does have three different injuries since the Texans drafted him.
Yeah.
That's not an easy place to win, though. I don't think this is going to be some sort of walkover. And Arian Foster looked better last week than I remember him looking for most of last year. He looked terrific, and their running game's been pretty good.
I see this as a one possession game where Andrew Luck makes a play at the end in, I don't know, 2010, something like that. Feels right.
That wouldn't be one game?
Well, no, it's a one possession game. Andrew Luck does something, and away we go. It's 2010,
like it.
And we all go home. Let's all go home, actually. Actually, go downstairs and work for 17 more hours. We got a lot more to do today, but this podcast is over. We will be back on Thursday night with our full Week 6 preview, including hitting up all the games on Sunday and recapping the game we just talked about. So send in your money tags. You know, keep it real. This is Dan Hansa signing off for the Mailman, the Sizzler, the Boss, and TD behind the glass. Bye.